Welcome to Navigating to Net Zero, an inside look from Macquarie Asset Management at what's really involved in transforming their global portfolio of infrastructure, agricultural, and real estate assets to support the transition to a low-carbon and climate-resilient economy and build sustainable long-term value. I'm Rebecca Darst, the host of this series and the founder of Investable Universe. In this episode, we'll talk about the road to net zero emissions in telecom utilities. We'll look at how two Macquarie-backed companies in the UK and Australia, respectively, are tackling the sustainability challenge for data centers, poles, and wires while keeping the phones on and the internet humming. First, the voice that you hear on the other end of the line at this UK telecom...
Thank you for calling KCOM.
...is the sound of independence. Headquartered in Hull in Northern England, KCOM has long prided itself on doing things differently. Since its founding in 1904, the company has remained an independent telecom services provider, resisting pressure from the UK Postal Service, which controlled most of the nation's communications network, to consolidate under the single national service that became British Telecom. Staying out of the larger network has given KCOM the freedom to go its own way. As it travels the road to net zero, KCOM has been freer to innovate improvements to its own infrastructure. This has included starting an ambitious plan to switch out its old copper wires for lower emission fiber, and growing its core business along sustainable lines while addressing digital access and reliability concerns for its thousands of customers in the north of England. So how is KCOM acting to reduce its carbon footprint? Hold please for Caroline Morris, KCOM's head of well-being, health, safety, and sustainability. Caroline Morris from KCOM, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Hi, Rebecca. It's a pleasure to speak to you too.
And I wonder if you could just share with our listeners what KCOM's network footprint looks like in the Humber region where you're based and how it came to be so distinct and independent from the rest of, let's say, the national telecom network in the UK.
I'm sure many people will know about the iconic red telephone boxes that are associated with the UK. But in Hull, we like to do things a little bit differently and do things our own way. And KCOM, our telephone network, is not part of the British Telecom system. So whereas the rest of the country have red telephone boxes, we have cream-coloured telephone boxes. And it's part of our sort of local identity and heritage that people are really proud of being different. It's a benefit from having a very stubborn city council 100 years ago who refused to become part of the national network that's allowed us to be a very independent regional supplier of telecoms today. We have some of the best connectivity in the UK, and that's a real benefit to businesses locally. And there are businesses that wouldn't be here. They've chosen to come to Hull because of that connectivity and that guaranteed connectivity.
Can you talk a little about the traditional industrial emissions footprint of the Humber region overall?
The Humber region is the largest carbon emitter in the UK. But the benefit of that is we all have a vested interest on working together to reduce those emissions. And it's great seeing all these local companies come together to share and learn knowledge from each other. Some of that's done under the banner of Yes to Net Zero in Hull, which really is trying to sort of put some momentum and some focus into how we can all contribute to that net zero journey in the Humber region so that we can be seen as a great example worldwide. The vast majority of people in Hull use our telephone and internet services. So we have that duty, really, to make sure that we are being as sustainable as possible.
Can you tell me about the overall carbon emissions footprint of telecom as a whole?
The traditional copper telephone network, what a lot of people don't really quite realise is that we're putting power down that network all the time. We're using electricity in order to maintain that copper network. And then on top of that, in order to run that network, there's the actual equipment costs and also the cooling requirements.
What has it been like for you to work with Macquarie in aligning your net zero goals with the larger corporate ambitions?
So it's great to be working with a business that whose owners are absolutely committed to the net zero journey and have set an ambitious target of getting to net zero by 2040, which is 10 years ahead of the UK. Having that push from Macquarie is really beneficial because it means that, you know, board members are engaged with what we are doing and are engaged with our net zero journey. But I think beyond that, it's enabled us to connect in with other like-minded businesses across the Macquarie portfolio to share and learn from each other, and also to tap into some of Macquarie's expertise about, well, what can we do more corporately to understand how we get to net zero.
What's on KCOM's shortlist to cut emissions? What are the strategies that you're focusing on
in the near term to reduce emissions?
So the big one that we'd already sort of got in flight was our One Network project. That's that transition to make sure that we decommission the copper network and move everybody onto a fibre network. That's going to bring a massive reduction in our energy, in our electricity consumption. We estimate it's going to be around a 35% reduction in our electricity use. That's huge. As well as looking at things like how do we just not use energy in the first place, but also what can we also do to produce energy in-house? We've already installed solar panels at one of our offices, and at that location, it generates about 18% of the electricity that's required for that site. It's a precious resource, and we all need to use less in order to be more sustainable. We have about 200 vehicles within our fleet that are currently diesel. You know, if we can move to electric vehicles, there's a massive benefit to us there as well.
So I just want to kind of circle back to your copper to fiber switch out project. This is an innovative and ambitious endeavor that's going to cut 35% of your emissions overall. Can you talk about what's involved in that project?
If only it was as simple as just flipping the switch and turning the copper off. So we have to build confidence, particularly among our elderly and vulnerable customers who are frightened, to be honest, of using different technology. A lot of what we're having to do at the moment is to really position this well with our customers so that they understand what the impact is.
How long does such a switch out take from start to finish, let's say?
You know, we want to start rolling this out at the beginning of next year with a view of transitioning our customers at 2025. So then we move on to the next transition of how do we turn off the equipment, but then make sure that we're decommissioning it in a sensible way so that we can get the maximum benefit from that decommissioning. So it's not just about the energy savings, it's also about other circular economy savings that we can make as well.
Yeah. So apropos of circular economy savings, what are you going to do with all that copper once it's decommissioned?
So we're not just looking at reclaiming the copper from our cables. We're working with a business that will help us also reclaim the plastic coating from the copper. We're also looking at some really exciting techniques, sort of, you know, cutting edge techniques about how we can reclaim trace metals out of printed circuit boards, such as the gold, the palladium, and other metals out of printed circuit boards. And the company that we're using is using a really exciting technique where they call it bioleaching. And that uses bacteria to basically digest the metals out of the printed circuit boards.
And I wonder if you could talk a little more about some of the hidden material costs and the carbon impacts or plastic fixtures on your network infrastructure and how just making adjustments there can yield outsized impacts to your larger emissions reduction goals.
The plastic ducting is the sort of pipes that we use to feed our cables through, our fiber optic cables. We landed on another supplier who uses recycled plastic to make their ducting, and it was cheaper and it could be recycled at the end of life. And you're thinking, what's there not to like about this? So part of our procurement journey now is really looking at how can we ask the questions of our suppliers as to what are they doing to become, you know, on their journey to become more sustainable. And how does that benefit us as a company?
I wonder if that kind of short-term pressures of higher electricity costs affect your ability to get people on board with longer-term change.
Electricity and fuel costs have gone up dramatically in the last 12 months. So there is a really good business case for us to actually make that transition sooner rather than later. And if anything, it's pulled forward the One Network migration rather than pushing it back. If our customers are struggling financially, we have a responsibility, because we're so much part of that local identity, to make sure that there is real equity across our society locally, to make sure everybody can access good quality internet.
I wonder if you can talk about access to renewable energy sources for energy intensive enterprises, whether it's telecom or industrial. What has that been like for you in Northern England?
With having that focus locally on the net zero journey, we've also seen a huge amount of investment in green technologies in the Humber region. We have Siemens, who are doing some of the largest wind farms just outside of the Humber in the North Sea. And you're seeing a lot of investment in the region, looking at how we can push carbon dioxide back into some of the old gas fields. We purchase our electricity from suppliers that can guarantee that it's coming from renewable sources.
When our listeners see those cream-colored telephone boxes in the north of England, they're going to know it's a low carbon company, and it's a bright future for telecom connectivity in the north of England. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rebecca. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
A final note, As you heard from Caroline Morris at the top of the interview, the Humber region in England's industrial north is the UK's largest carbon emitter due to the region's historic home to steelmaking plants, power stations, and refineries. But thanks in part to KCOM's very reliable fiber connectivity, as well as KCOM's backing, the region is beginning to rebrand as a digital hub with the Centres for Digital Innovation in Hull. Now to Australia, where we'll meet with a company whose communications network might be Australia's best-kept secret.
Vocus's expertise in sovereign, secure national fiber solutions for government and business is Australia's best-kept secret.
That's Vocus, the telecom provider that services more than 200 Australian government agencies and two-thirds of the ASX 200 index of listed companies. Here's something that's maybe not so secret: the carbon emissions footprint of its data centers. For Vocus, as for many telecom providers, data centers alone account for close to 90% of the company's Scope 2 emissions. But controlling electricity use when your client roster includes critical infrastructure and high-security clients means you cannot ever put network reliability on the line. So how do you balance 24/7 connectivity needs for government and corporate bellwethers with zero-emission business planning in a huge country already facing some of the most visible effects of climate change? Vocus's Louisa Harris-Baxter is going to tell us. Louisa Harris-Baxter, head of ESG at Vocus, thank you for talking to me today.
Thanks so much for having me, Rebecca.
Why is now the time and place that Vocus can make a meaningful difference in carbon emissions?
You know, the science is very clear that we need to act now to prevent the more catastrophic impacts of global warming. And so what can we do? You know, how can we best make a positive impact in this space? We are, you know, very proud of the fiber networks that we have and the connectivity that they provide, but we're also very aware that they are, by their very nature, resource intensive. So that's why we were really pleased to set a target this year to achieve net zero emissions across our operations in 2025.
Vocus, as a company, has gone through some major changes of late. Australia's fourth largest telecom provider was a listed company until mid-2021, when it was acquired by Macquarie Infrastructure and Real Assets and Aware Super, one of Australia's largest pension funds. Vocus was taken private following that deal, let go its New Zealand operations, and today focuses on its core activities in Australia, where it operates more than 25,000 kilometers of fiber network connecting all of Australia's mainland capitals with New Zealand, Asia, and the US. Vocus has also just launched a five-year billion-dollar investment program to extend its geographic reach, upgrade its capacity, and grow its product suite, while also aiming for net zero carbon emissions. Talk about the business case for net zero for Vocus.
Over the past few years, what we've really seen is just such strong stakeholder alignment from investors, from lenders, from employees. As we've seen more of Gen Z enter the market, carbonizing our network becomes a really key part of our stakeholder value proposition, our customer value proposition, our employee value proposition. The fact that we have new owners in Macquarie and Aware Super, who are just such strong advocates in this space and who are really encouraging their portfolio companies to take bold climate action. You know, it was probably one of the easier business cases that I've had to get over the line.
So what does the path to net zero look like for Vocus?
Vocus is very fortunate that as a telecommunications company, our pathway to net zero is quite simple. Telecommunications companies, by their nature, are very Scope 2 intensive. We use a lot of electricity versus direct fuels, which are our Scope 1s. And so the pathway really begins with minimizing your underlying emissions as much as possible, which we're doing through our energy efficiency and abatement opportunities, particularly targeted within our data centers. As a second step, it's about purchasing renewable energy to cover the rest of that electricity consumption. And then the third and final step is about abating your Scope 1 impacts, whether you can do that directly by, say, transitioning your diesel fleet cars to electric ones wherever possible.
Data centers have a reputation as kind of the bad boys of emissions when it comes to telecommunications. Can you just give our listeners a sense of what is involved in powering and specifically cooling a data center?
It's true. Data centers are predicted to produce, I think they say, up to 3.2% of global emissions by 2025, which is really significant. On the other hand to that, though, consolidating all of the mum and dad home servers into the cloud is actually underlyingly going to really help us to improve our emissions impact. It is one of the most resource intensive aspects of running a data center. So our data centers are cooled using large scale cooling units predominantly, but there are really good opportunities for us to actually drive emissions reductions by being a bit creative with how we cool them. there are options available to us to apply things like free cooling techniques, to be separating hot and cold aisles within our data centers, and also just by upgrading the chillers themselves.
As I understand it, your data centers have been around for a while, and perhaps maybe they were constructed before the current energy efficiency standards took effect. What's involved are extensive retrofits. Can you talk about sort of the life cycle of a data center?
So we operate 14 data centers. They're all of different ages. And so it's very critical for all data center operators to have really strong infrastructure lifecycle management processes in place. We want to make sure that we are maintaining uptime and maximum operational efficiency within our data centers. And so we are always looking for more technologically advanced and efficient equipment over time.
So Australia is a vast country with huge, sparsely populated areas where telecom networks can't be connected to main power. Here, in Vocus's intercapital telecom network, you've decided to use controlled environment vaults, CEVs, small network sites which store network infrastructure at controlled temperatures in these remote areas, as testbeds for solar-powered cooling. Following the introduction of solar-powered cooling, most of Vocus's CEVs on the intercapital network are already energy self-sufficient. How are solar-powered CEVs, as a test case, influencing your plans to use renewable energy as you build out new network sites in Australia?
We are doing a number of major builds at the moment where we are first thinking about how we can use solar and whether we can build those larger scale CEVs for these new networks using solar. And Project Horizon, which is a huge new network that we're building within Western Australia, half of the CEVs along that network will be solar powered. Wherever possible, we'll be doing that going forward, which really helps us with that getting towards net zero.
Can you talk about the most immediate risks to Vocus's physical network that are due to climate change?
We experience bushfires. We're experiencing just unprecedented flooding in Victoria, where I am, and in New South Wales right now at the moment. And so because our network and our controlled environment vaults, or our CEVs, are placed, you know, all around Australia and our cabling tunnels all over Australia as well, we are absolutely exposed to that risk. And I think having that tangible view of the potential impacts of climate change really does help to crystallize you around taking that broader, longer term climate action for sure.
Can you talk about any upcoming projects that you have that you'd like to share with the listeners?
We have been underway with the energy efficiency programs within our data centers for a number of years because they're just good business. You know, the target is not going to change the course of that work, but it is absolutely turning up the dial on it. So we have quite a number of energy efficiency initiatives that we're kicking off this year out to 2025 to help us to achieve that 15% reduction. We are talking and spending a lot more time with our suppliers to understand our scope 3 emissions and to map that for us, because our target currently is a scope 1 and 2 target. But, you know, like everyone, we're very aware of our broader impacts and need to really also mitigate and manage our scope 3 impact.
What was your process like in terms of developing your net zero business plan? And can you talk about what it was like to work with Macquarie on that process?
Yeah, it was just, I think, a really wonderful marriage of minds, in that this is work that Vocus has wanted to do for a long time. But over the past 3 years, there's been a lot of underlying governance and sort of uplift across the business that has meant that it hasn't been quite the right time yet to approach net zero and what we were doing in this space. And so Macquarie coming in and also having a really strong view that portfolio companies should be preferencing this work and making this happen quite quickly has just made it a lot easier to kind of get that work done and get that traction.
I understand that coming up with a plan meant doing some serious time in the weeds of your electricity data, as it were.
Obviously, you can't set a target out of thin air. And so we spent a lot of time really understanding our underlying emissions, gathering and understanding our emissions boundary and collecting old electricity invoices from 2018 for over 300 network sites isn't a very fun thing to do. It took a few months, and I think it was really important for us to take that time because it really helped us to uncover small sites that maybe weren't previously in our inventory.
Part of Vocus's transition of the past few years has involved a transition from being a listed telecom to being a privately held company. And I wonder if you could talk a little about that as it pertains to your sustainability initiatives and the transparency requirements of private versus public companies.
You know, technically speaking, the onus on privately held companies should be less. But What I've actually found in practice is that's not the case at all. And that's, I think, probably testament to the fact that we are owned by two companies who really have a strong or provide a strong mandate on climate action. And so probably there is greater expectation as a privately held company of our action in this space than there was when we were listed. It isn't just about regulation or reporting that are driving this action anymore. It's stakeholders. And they are the same whether you are privately held or publicly held. You know, there is so much pressure from customers, from communities, from your people, from, I guess, the investment community, which pertains more so to listed companies than privately held ones. But even in a privately held companies, our financial lenders are asking us about our action in this space. And it's certainly going to start to even more so play into decision-making around things like our credit scores and things going forward. So there is less expectation on privately held companies, but it is not material. It is absolutely not changing the way that we make decisions. If you're a very resource-intensive company that, you know, isn't participating towards this, that is going to absolutely start to impact on your ability to do business, because those upstream from you and downstream from you are going to be really considering their climate impacts and trying to manage their scope threes. And it will not be possible, from my experience of looking at recent customer tender documents and bid requirements, to do business with other companies effectively if you're not also managing your climate change impacts.
Louisa Harris-Baxter, head of ESG at Vocus, thank you for talking to me today.
It was my pleasure. Thanks so much, Rebecca.
And a final note, Vocus's network footprint spans not only huge tracts of Australia's landmass, but also includes more than 6,000 kilometers of submarine telecommunications cable that connects Australia with Southeast Asia. These projects, the Australia-Singapore Cable and Northwest Cable System, mean that Vocus has now begun to manage network carbon emissions that actually originate underwater. Thank you for listening to an episode of the podcast series Navigating to Net Zero, an inside look from Macquarie Asset Management at what's really involved in transforming their global portfolio of infrastructure, agricultural, and real estate assets to support the transition to a low-carbon and climate-resilient economy and build sustainable long-term value. Until next time.
The views expressed in this podcast represent those of the speaker and are subject to change. Nothing presented should be construed as a recommendation to purchase or sell any security or follow any investment technique or strategy, and does not constitute advice, an advertisement, an invitation, a confirmation, an offer, or a solicitation to engage in any investment activity or an offer of any banking or financial service. Investing involves risk, including the possible loss of principal. All examples herein are for illustrative purposes only, and there can be no assurance that any particular investment objective will be realized or any investment strategy seeking to achieve such objective will be successful. Past performance is not a reliable indication of future performance. Before acting on any information, consider the appropriateness of it with regard to your particular objectives, financial situation and needs, and seek advice. No representation or warranty, expressed or implied, is made as to the accuracy or completeness of the information, opinions, and conclusions presented. In preparing this recording, reliance has been placed, without independent verification, on the accuracy and completeness of all information available from external sources. Macquarie Asset Management, MAM, is the asset management division of Macquarie Group. MAM is a full-service asset manager offering a diverse range of products across public and private markets, including fixed income, equities, multi-asset solutions, private credit, infrastructure, renewables, natural assets, real estate, and asset finance. Other than Macquarie Bank Limited, any Macquarie Group entity noted in this podcast is not an authorized deposit-taking institution for the purposes of the Banking Act 1959, Commonwealth of Australia. The obligations of these other Macquarie Group entities do not represent deposits or other liabilities of Macquarie Bank. Macquarie Bank does not guarantee or otherwise provide assurance in respect of the obligations of these other Macquarie Group entities. In addition, if this podcast relates to an investment, the investor is subject to investment risk, including possible delays in repayment and loss of income and principal invested, and none of Macquarie Bank or any other Macquarie Group entity guarantees any particular rate of return on or the performance of the investment, nor do they guarantee repayment of capital in respect of the investment.